And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are here for our other interview for So Close, the story of the 1997-98 Washington Capitals. It is I, Michael Lindenbaum, and joining me, he was acquired by the Washington Capitals on March 21st, 1994, when they traded defenseman Ally Afraidy to Boston, and he spent six seasons with the Capitals, playing 312 games and recording 62 goals and 172 assists for 234 points, and scored possibly one of the most iconic goals in Capitals history, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joey Juneau. Joey, welcome to the I guess, podcast style for the interview here.
Yes, hi. Hi. It's good to join you.
I'm greatly appreciative for you doing this. This is a opportunity for you to be able to reflect on the 97-98 season as a whole. Obviously, this is the season where the Capitals made it to the Cup Final for the very first time, and you played a very huge part on this team. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say as we take this journey through 97-98 again.
Yes, I'll try my best to remember.
So we're going to hop right on into it. Right off the bat, after the 96-97 season concluded, owner Abe Pullen and team president Dick Patrick decided it was time for a change, and as a result, coach Jim Schoenfeld was fired and general manager David Poile did not have his contract renewed. What were your thoughts on this decision?
It's not always easy to through my career. I guess it lasted 13 seasons, and we had this situation in Boston before I went to Washington, where my first coach was Rick Bowness, and then even if we had a nice run losing to Pittsburgh in the semifinal in the summertime, surprisingly, Rick Bowness was fired and replaced by Brian Sutter. So right off the bat in my career in the NHL, I had to deal with a change of coach. I got traded to Washington, got there, and really got along, I guess, with everyone, and including Jim Schoenfeld. Myself as a player, just found out, the next season that I guess my way of playing the game was not really the way that that Jim played the game when he was a player, but was coaching. So it was at time very difficult for me as a player to to be creative and to have the latitude that I needed to have as a playmaker to do my work. We had some issues and stuff over the years, although I respected a lot of the I liked a lot of the stuff that he did, and I respected him as a coach for the most part, but obviously as a man, as a former player. It was just for me as a player, it was tough at time to be the player that I was or that I could be under him, and the way that he was coaching and asking players to play. So, to go back to your question, when we found out in the summertime the change of direction, the change of coaching, I remember seeing this as positive. Although, again, I was never happy of someone losing their job, someone getting traded and stuff like that. So that part of it, you know, I was obviously not pleased with it. I felt sad for David Poile, who had obviously an amazing career and who did great things after leaving Washington. So anyway, I was sad about that, but there was a positive side of it, which brought something new, you know, a new coaching staff that would arrive, bringing, I guess, some kind of a liberty in terms of, you know, being an offensive player and trying to contribute that way. So I guess that's the best way for me to answer your question.
All right. And I was going to ask, the next question was actually going to be on, after the extensive search that the Capitals did, they hired Ron Wilson as the new coach and George McPhee as general manager. What were your initial thoughts of these hires?
I didn't know them. You know, I knew them by names, but personally, I didn't know them at all. So everything was new. And, you know, when we started the year, it was really, you know, starting from scratch, you know, getting to know them. But, you know, for them, getting to know you as well as, you know, as a player.
It's not like it was always beautiful or wonderful. You know, we had issues at times, but for the most part, it was a fun season, if I can put aside the few injuries that I had to deal with and the setbacks that I suffered. But at the end, you know, I was able to get back in the lineup and at the right time and contribute to help the team in the Stanley Cup run there.
So it should be noted that the season started on October 1st, 1997, in Toronto against the Maple Leafs. In this game, Bill Ranford went in as the number one goaltender, but was injured early in the game. Olaf Kolzig came in, and from that point on, never looked back. What were your thoughts on this moment and the season that Kolzig eventually had in
97-98? What you just said, I don't recall. I don't remember. I'm sure Ole would remember. Bill came in the same big trade the spring before. The same trade that brought Oates and Tocchet. Everybody thought that, Ranford would be our goalie. In a career, you know, when you have something like that happening, and then you have a player like, you know, or in this case, a goaltender like Ole, you know, who everybody liked, you know, and he's a great personality and was always fun to be around. So he came in and just, he was from that point on the goalie that he was able to be. And, everybody knows that he was a major, major part of how far we got to go in the spring, you know.
After missing the season opener and also some games due to injuries as well, like you had mentioned, you had missed some. Peter Bondra had 52 goals in the 97-98 season, tying him for first with Teemu Selanne of the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. How much of an impact player was Bondra for the Capitals that season?
Well, each season, Bonsai was, you knew that he was a player
who would score a lot of goals. And he did, you know. So a lot of the wins, a lot of the games we won were greatly due to, you know, the goals that he scored. So, you know, he had this this gift of, you know, there's some players, you know, that's their number one quality is just the way that they found the back of the net. And Peter was one of those guys, you know, but he was also a player that was very exciting to watch as a fan, I'm sure, due to his speed. So it's just not that this guy was parked in one place waiting for one-timers, you know, like a Brett Hall or like a Ovechkin or, you know, Peter was just a guy that was, you know, just a very fast skater. And so anyway, yeah, he was obviously a big, big element to our team, you know, to do well in the playoffs. First of all, you need to get there, right? And his contribution over an entire season was remarkable. But when you speak about Peter Bondra, you need to speak about Michael Pivanka, who was in my book a great hockey player, who was very good in all zones. And I think that Michael was a great part of what Peter was able to accomplish in his career. Although that 97-98 season was a little different since, if I remember right, during the season, Adam Oates ended up playing a lot of games with Banzai on his line, I think.
Yeah. You mentioned Pivanka. Pivanka, actually, when I was doing the research, a lot of his quotes played a massive role in Chapter 5 of this docuseries. And Chapter 5 was about November of 1997, where we saw both Chris Simon suspended for allegedly using racial slurs towards Edmonton Oilers forward Mike Greer, and Craig Berube suspended for allegedly using a racially offensive comment towards Florida Panthers rookie Peter Worrell. This was a very interesting time, as this became the first time players in the NHL were suspended for such actions. And a huge reason for that was because this was the first season the NHL was sending players to the Olympics. When these incidents and suspensions happened, what did you as a team do to both rally around Simon and Berube, but also make sure incidents like this did not happen again?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the ways to go about things were changing in the league. People have to know that these comments, I was called a frog and a fucking frog many times in my life, you know, and so. I don't think that very often, you know, the guys that are gonna go and call you names and where it sounds that it sounds like it's racist and really bad and stuff. What I know for a fact is, in the case of, Chris Simon, because, I was with Chris and we lived together during that period. When that game finished, we drove home together, and I remember how sad he felt about the entire situation. But, again, he was for sure called many names in his career, in his life, when he said that, or when, Craig Berube said that. I don't think those guys were racist. As fact, I'm convinced that they were not racist. It's something that could be said to get the other guys out of the, you know, out of their mind, pissed off, you know, to turn around and take penalties themselves and stuff like that. So anyway, not to to defend them at all, you know, but, you know, things like that obviously don't have a place in sports anymore. During my time, or during, you know, the first part of my career, you know, obviously things like that were there, you know, like calling names, you know, could be sexual, it could be racist, it could be whatever. You know, a lot of times, you know, the guys just didn't mean it. They just came out of their mouths in the action, in the fire, and that was it, you know. So anyway, that's what I saw, that's what I remember from it, and you know, those were great teammates of mine, and not that I'm taking their defense, but I know for a fact that they were not bad guys. So
yeah, and you mentioned about being called a frog. One of the quotes that I was able to pull from my research that I used for chapter 5 was actually from Sylvain Côté saying the exact thing about him being called a frog as well. And Pavanka mentioned about, because of when he came in with the old Soviet Union, no matter where you were from, you're always considered like a Russian, and that they would target the European players especially. So it was very interesting doing the research during for that chapter. On November 26, 1997, the Capitals played their final game at U.S. Airways Arena, also known as the Capitol Center, and retired Ron Langway's number as part of the ceremonies for the final game. Unfortunately for the Capitals, they fell to the Montreal Canadiens, and it also wasn't on television, as the Washington Wizards of the NBA were on HTS that night. What was it playing that game and being part of the last Capitals game at that venue, but then also knowing that no one outside of those in attendance didn't get to see the game?
That I didn't know, or at least I don't remember. As far as the last game played there, from what I remember, everybody was very anxious to move away from there. we knew the new building was coming up, and you know, everybody was very, very excited to go play downtown and to you know, go play in a new facility and all that stuff. So that's pretty much all I remember from that. You know, you're driving to the old arena at times. You know, it's it was you know, you felt that you were you know, in the middle of nowhere. A lot of times, you know, you'd go there and you know, with all the excitement that I had in my life playing in rinks, you know, like obviously the Boston, you know, the old Boston Garden, and when you go on the road, you know, you play in place like you know, like Montreal, or you know, those rinks were, you know, you obviously didn't have the same atmosphere when you played in Washington. You know, there were some great games, like the first playoffs that I played there. You know, when we played Pittsburgh, and then, you know, New York. You know, like at times it was very, very exciting, but you know, to be honest, it never came close to the same level as it was as a player when you play at home in Boston. For example,
what were some of your fondest memories of the old Capitol Center besides moving out of there?
Well, the obviously the first game, you know, that I played there after getting traded, it was I think it was Hartford, and you know, it's weird because what I remember from that is, you know, I was coming to Washington to in a way to replace I.F. Rady, who was a player who was really appreciated and loved by many fans, you know. So for all those fans who love I.F. Rady, you know, to have me there, I mean, it's not at all the same kind of player, you know. It's not like a defenseman for a defenseman. It's I remember, like, you know, sometimes, yeah, I remember, like, this one fan, you know, he always stood in on top of the that gateway where we walked in and out of the locker room to the ice, and you know, at times, you know, just pissed off and yelling and stuff, and he was wearing a Freddy's jersey, so that was a little bit funny. But to go back to that, you know, what I remember, obviously that one game, and having an interview at the end of the game that we won, and I believe I even got the star of the game, and I had this interview just by the ice there, and it was, you know, it was a great way to start for my new team. And then after that, you know, like I said, I mean, the run that we had that spring, you know, and beating Pittsburgh, you know, I remember one game, I believe it was game six, the game that we ended up, you know, beating Pittsburgh. They invited the Ron Langway to come on the ice just before the game, and I remember the crowd just went crazy. And for us as players, it was a big boost. So yeah, those were great moments that I do remember. Obviously, there's more, you know, there's more of them, but I would say those are the really the high peaks, I would say. What I remember the most from playing in that arena.
Awesome. Moving forward, on December 5th, 1997, the Capitals made their MCI Center, now Capital One Arena, debut with a 3-2 overtime victory over the Florida Panthers. What were your first impressions of the new arena?
Well, like I said before, I mean, it was everybody was very excited to move down there. And although at first, you know, it didn't feel like it was our arena, but it became our arena pretty fast, you know. So it's it was a little bit weird, you know, in the middle of the year like this, I guess during the season, changing arenas and starting to play home games in that new facility. You know, I had made the decision to also move where I, you know, I was in Gambrills, Maryland, and decided to go to Alexandria to get closer to the home game arena. So it was obviously a big change in my life, but it was fun. You know, it was a fun time getting there. It was like a rebirth, I guess.
On January 25th, 1998, the Capitals debuted a brand new alternate jersey against the Boston Bruins. This marked the first time in franchise history that the Capitals would have an alternate jersey. What were your initial thoughts on it, and how was it received with the rest of the players? And then of the three jerseys the Capitals wore that season, the White Eagle, the Blue Eagle, and the Black Dome, which one was your favorite?
I really liked the black one, and from what I remember, everybody loved that black jersey. I just thought it was a great design. You know, we loved wearing it. It was a sharp thing to do, and yeah.
My favorite is the Blue Eagle. That's always been my favorite.
The blue one, yeah.
Yeah, the blue eagle.
Oh, we like that one too. It's funny because I'm talking to you and I see the, there's a frame in my room here where, it's the gift that each player received after they retire from the NHL. It's a gift from the NHLPA, and there's two. Well, there's many pictures, but there's two of them. You know, one with the blue jersey and the other one with the old red one. It's funny because after all those years, now it's like, oh man, that red one was really cool too. You know.
Awesome. During the 97-98 season, three members of the Capitals reached the 1,000 point plateau. They were Adam Oates, Phil Housley, and Dale Hunter. This also marked the first and only time three players from the same team reached the 1,000 point plateau in the same season. What was it like seeing these three reach this milestone? And of the three, who were you the happiest for?
It was very special. It was very, very special. I can't say that I was more happy for one than the others. It was just equally, great accomplishment. And, when you have the chance to play alongside guys that have, such careers, I mean, it's a privilege, So it was great. Yeah, it was great to see that, to see them reach those, that plateau and to be recognized that way and to be a part of it in a way. Yeah.
For the Olympics, as I mentioned earlier, this was the first time the NHL allowed its players to go to the games. For the Capitals, Ron Wilson was named coach for Team USA. Kalle Johansson was named captain for Team Sweden. Bondra and Richard Zednik were named the Team Slovakia, and Olaf Kolzik was named the Team Germany, along with prospect Jan Benda. Sergei Gonchar was also named the Team Russia at a later date. How happy were you for these guys when they were named to their respective Olympic squads?
Well, everybody was very happy for our teammates, to have, the chance to participate in the Olympics, I mean, to me, in my entire career, although I went to the Stanley Cup Finals twice and then still had, a very decent career and long in a way, when you know that I, started after my college career, my peak was, the best part of my hockey life was when I went to the Olympics. So obviously I was happy for those guys, and I think everybody on the team, all the other teammates, were for those guys, and we all wished them well and a great experience. I have to admit that starting that season, although I knew that Canada had a lot of great players to possibly make that team. I was hoping that having a great first half of the season, maybe getting a place on that team. And I remember at one point having a discussion with Adam Oates on that, because Adam and I, we all the games that we played together. As a duo, our stats were incredible, and when you think of the great stats that OTC had playing alongside other players, and even players like Brett Hall, from what we had looked at and found out, was that the stats that him and I had during the times we played together, especially the early on and during the time in Boston, it was really amazing, the contribution that we had and the chemistry that we had playing together. So the discussions that that we had, because we very often we commuted together, and we went to practice and sometimes to games together. And you know, I think if the approach of the Canadian team would have been the same as it was, for example, the year that the Olympics were in Vancouver, where Team Canada made, you know, constructed the team based on duos, you know, where the, you know, they had the, you know, two guys coming from San Jose, you know, Marleau and Thornton, and then they had a couple guys from Anaheim and a couple guys. And so they, it was very interesting how they built the team, you know. So if the teams would have been built the same way, you know, maybe a duo of Adam Holtz and I would have been interesting. But it didn't happen. You know, for me, it was, you know, I was really hoping in the first place to have a great start of the season and to do well, and maybe to put those guys in a position where, you know, you'd had a chance to be picked, but the team was picked differently. And then, yeah, they went there and it ended up being some kind of a fiasco, I guess.
I'm about to get to the fiasco.
Yeah. for our country, things didn't go well at all. Some of the picks for that team were really questioned by many, and as well, obviously, the pick of not, you know, choosing Wayne Gretzky to send for a breakaway for a shootout when it was, you know, really there on the line. So anyway, so that was the long way to answer your question. I was obviously very happy for those guys to go to the Olympics, but I honestly, deep down, I wished that I could have been there myself for my country.
You mentioned fiasco. I said we'll get to that in a moment. For Ron Wilson, he had the Team USA hotel trashing incident while Bondra and Kolzig's teams were eliminated before they even arrived, and Richard Zednik never got to play in a single game as a result of that as well. How disappointed were you with how things went down for Wilson, Bondra, Zednik, and Kolzig?
You know, it's now you say that and it brings back the memories, but you know, so it's obviously a big turn off when things happen that way. As far as Team USA, the you know, again, you know, we heard and read stories of that incident, and I don't really have anything to say about that. It's you know, obviously it didn't help at all the reputation of that team. Very often when it happens, it falls on the staff, you know, and I'm sure that Ron Wilson, you know, got some directed towards him, although, you know, it had obviously nothing to do with him, I'm sure. So, but yeah.
Yeah, it should be noted that Kolzig and Bondra did play against each other in a consolation game, and Bondra got into a fight with one of the German defensemen, thus getting ejected from the game, and it happened right in front of Kolzig, and one of the greatest quotes from Kolzig is, "What do I do? Do I help out Bondra because he's my teammate with the Cavs, or do I help out the other guy because he's my teammate right now?" So it was like a very interesting time with the Olympics in Nagano.
Yeah, obviously an awkward situation for Oli. But it's you know, after you said that, you know, I do remember that those guys went there and the tournament was over, and it's like just making a big trip for nothing. But yeah, it's really what's sad is by the time you get there, you don't even have the chance to compete and participate in it. So it's you know, again, stories that I got was that the Olympics from that day on, from that day, have totally changed as far as ice hockey was concerned. You know, I played in the 92 Olympics, and I know that in 94 it was also a very, very fun and great experience for the hockey players. Obviously Maginot was not close to that. So
yeah, and we know that for 2026, we know that the All-Star, they're supposed to do an All-Star game and then have the players leave immediately from the All-Star festivities to Italy for the Olympics this time around. On March 8th, 1998, the Capitals acquired forward Esa Tiikkanen from the Florida Panthers, and then on March 21st, the Capitals signed forward Brian Bellows. What was it like getting both Tiikkanen and Bellows, and what did they add to the team dynamic into the locker room?
It was a strong message coming from the coming from the staff, George McPhee and Ron Wilson. And I remember in Vancouver, we had a meeting arriving at the hotel about this entire situation. I guess, you know, maybe some were nervous that, you know, players would take it the wrong way, and I'm sure some did. In my case, you know, I didn't feel like my position on the team was in jeopardy, but I'm sure some players did. Obviously, something that was said was, hey, we are loading for a great playoffs, and we are bringing players with great Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, players that have won before, players that who know how to win, what it takes to win. You know, we obviously had guys who had great playoffs, and, you know, my personal stats in playoffs were pretty good. Although, you know, I never got to the end, you know. So when you get those guys, you know, coming next to you, well, it doesn't mean that Esa Tiikkanen and Brian Bellows are going to be better than you or better than Adam Oates and better than... It's just that, you know, they're coming to help, and they're coming to share the experience that they had, you know. And anyway, I really saw that as being very, very positive. And it was, you know, it was, you know, those guys came in and they really brought a new dimension to our team. And, you know, they were players with great careers and great achievements. With they had rings, and we respected that, and we took that help, and they ended up becoming a great part of our team for that run, for sure.
So the Capitals ended the season with a new franchise record of 476 man games lost to injury. Dale Hunter and Adam Oates were the only two players to play all 82 games this season. How challenging was it that season, knowing that the team had so many injuries? And I should put in a note that while out due to injury, forward Mike Eagle spent a small stint behind the bench. So what was that like for you guys? How challenging was it knowing that you had that many injuries on the team?
It's funny. I do remember the Mike Eagle, you know, being behind the bench as I guess an assistant coach.
Called himself a cheerleader.
No, but it was sharp, you know. Like Eags was someone who was very appreciated, you know, by his teammates. You know, player that always gave it all. And so yeah, that was a nice thing to do to get him there behind the bench. but yeah, you know, we had a couple seasons in a row where you know, the next season was even worse, you know, with dealing with a crazy amount of injuries. You know, I dealt with some you know, a couple of concussions, and I dealt with a broken knee, a knee on knee, where the guy actually never got suspended a game.
I believe that was Sandy Moger of the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah, that's it. That's right. I don't even know if he got, if he received a 2 minute for that hit. But anyway, I ended up getting out of there with a broken knee, and it was a battle for me to get back in shape and to get back on the ice. So at the end of the season, I'm like, man, am I going to be able to play again? And it ended up, turning out decent, I guess, well, and considering the playoffs that we had. But it was really a tough time. It was not fun having to deal with that injury, and because I felt that, yeah, I was having a decent season, and playing with guys who I had chemistry with, and then that thing happens. You know? So personally, it was tough to deal with, but the end of the season was a good one, and I'll never forget that.
After finishing the regular season with a 40-30-12 record, the Capitals finished fourth place in the Eastern Conference and faced the fifth place Boston Bruins in Eastern Conference quarterfinals. Game 3 was a turning point for the Capitals after having a Tim Taylor overtime goal overturned due to his foot being in the crease. You then scored in overtime to give the Capitals the 2-1 series lead. How important was that game, especially with the team's history of failure in playoff overtime games?
it's always something that was in the back of your mind, those years that my first spring there, yeah, we ended up beating Pittsburgh, but then after that, we kept although we played very good right off the bat in those rounds, we ended up losing to Pittsburgh, and never got that far in the playoffs, although we had good players, we had good teams those years. so anyway we got to that spring with in that new building with new players, and it really felt different. It felt like we had more confidence that we could go, all the way with that team. It was special. It's hard to explain, but sometimes you just have this, this thing going where, it just you just have the confidence. You believe in it. You believe in the team. The entire run, the whole time. I mean, it's the great memories that on and off the ice that I have from that spring. It was really, really an amazing time. And scoring goals in overtime a few times, and not just me, but Brian Boyle scored a goal in Boston, and I had a couple myself, and I believe was it Peter Bondra who had a big overtime goal at one point also. It was something special, and we all felt it. We looked around the locker room, and all those guys. I mean, we had amazing talent. We had amazing experience, And we had a goalie who was on top of his game. So yeah, we just believed in it big time.
So you had mentioned Brian Bellows has scored in overtime. So it took overtime to defeat the Bruins, and this time it was Brian Bellows to score the game-winning goal to clinch the series for the Capitals to move on to the next round. What was it like to defeat the Bruins and move on to the second round? And note, Brian Bellows scored the first goal and the last goal of the series for the Capitals.
Mm-hmm. So that's, it goes back to what I was saying a few minutes ago. You know, you get guys like, you know, Tikkanen, Bellows, who, you know, when the announcement came that they were coming to our team, many would say, oh, guys at the end of their career, you know, what is that about, you know? And, but, hey, when they came with us, I mean, they just brought this experience and this confidence, you know. You felt that you had a new dimension. You felt that you had guys who knew what it took to get to the end, and it's really what those guys were about, you know. It's not like Brian Bellows was the the best or the fastest skater, but a very smart player, obviously a great goal scorer. He knew how to finish. He knew how to play alongside good players. You know, he was someone that was that had a great sense of the game. Things that he did, considering the speed that he had, or the speed that he didn't have. BB was a great player to play with, and then you had, the other one you named was Esa Tikkanen, who, he came in and then really took on this role of being the player to play against the top centers and to shut them down. From what I remember, he did a great job against, number one guys on the other teams, like young Joe Thornton, who had to face Esa Tikkanen, and I'm sure it wasn't fun. Same thing with, Yashin. Yashin just hated it. I mean, he had the probably the the worst games of his life in that series against Ottawa. So anyway, that's. Those were the guys that we had the chance to add on to our team, and who obviously helped us tremendously.
You mentioned the Senators, Alexei Yashin. In the Eastern Conference semifinals, the Capitals did face the Ottawa Senators. They were a much younger team. Goaltender Ron Tugnutt had the Capitals' number all season, but in games 4 and 5, Olaf Kolzig had back-to-back shutouts to close out the Senators. What was going for your minds when preparing for the Senators, and then how all were you guys of what Kolzig did in this series?
Well, for in that series, but I don't think we were tested as much against Ottawa as we were against Boston and against Buffalo, or actually Detroit, obviously. I think that the series against Ottawa, although they surprised everybody. Who did they beat in the first round? I forgot, but they ended up beating a really good team, and then they
defeated New Jersey.
That's it. Yeah, New Jersey. So that surprised everybody, and they did. And then with us, we just overplayed them. We just had that experience and that confidence. We knew that they were a younger team, and although Tugnutt played great, you know, we knew that we had an even better player in the goal on our side, and that you know, we'd get, you know, the we'd get Tognot's number once it was time to play them, and that's really how it happened. You know, we started playing you know, Ottawa, and we, you know, for us it was like, oh man, it's much better to have Ottawa in our way than to have New Jersey, for sure. And everybody was thinking that.
Yeah.
No question there.
Yeah, and fun moment. I mentioned the back-to-back shutouts that Kolzig had. Obviously, Game 3, Daniel Alfredsson had a hat trick, and I believe they won 4-1 in that game to get back within one. And the Capitals are releasing their 50 greatest moments of, and they did the playoff run, and Kolzig was like, after he gave up that hat trick, he was like, they aren't getting a thing. And then he just posted the back-to-back shutouts, which was really cool. In the Eastern Conference Final, the Capitals took on the Buffalo Sabres, who were favored as the favorites due to goaltender Dominik Hasek. When preparing for the Sabres, what was going through your guys' minds, especially since this was the first time in 8 years the Capitals made it to the Conference Final?
Yeah, well, again, you know, we ended up beating Defoe, who, from what I remember, had a very good season. And then, you know, Tognot, who really stole the show in the playoffs before, even against us. I mean, it's not like he was bad at all. You know, he was a good goalie, and he was just playing great playoff hockey. But then we, you know, we just beat two teams with obviously very good goaltenders. And now we knew that we had to go and face probably the best, and maybe the best of all time. You know, I mean, I played the next season with, you know, with Hasek, after I got traded to Boston, once we got eliminated from the playoffs in Washington. So when I say that Dominik Hasek was, you know, perhaps, you know, the best goalie in the history of the NHL, you know, I mean, it's because I played with him. You know, I saw what he's about, and it's not to put down guys like Roy and Brodeur and others, but you know, Dominik Hasek was just amazing. I mean, very, very special hockey player and goaltender. So anyway, now we're getting to the semifinal, and we have him to beat. You know, we just entered the game one and then game two, and it was just, you know, one shift after the others, and just trying to keep on playing our best possible hockey and to believe in ourselves, knowing that obviously goals would not come easy. And what's funny is, I, after saying that, you know, I remember that I think in penalty killing, I just took a shot from the neutral zone at one point. It was just like a long shot. It was more like, hey, I'm just going to put the puck down there and then maybe go for a change or something like that. And the puck probably ended up having a weird, you know, sometimes like when you shoot, like the puck is just going to knuckle and move and stuff and whatever. I ended up scoring, I believe, from the red line or something crazy against Dominik Hasek. So it's something that probably happened only once in his career, and I was the one doing it. It's not like I was recognized for having the, you know, the great shot either. So, yeah, for some reason, you know, I ended up scoring a few against him, including obviously the, you know, the big goal in that brought us to the finals. And yeah, maybe I was just, you know, Johnny on the spot. And know, it was just a great playoff series. It was a tough one. You know, we obviously needed everybody to play great hockey, and that's what we had.
So it should be noted that you did score that in game two, and your goal when you scored that goal actually gave the Capitals their first lead in a game during the series with the Sabres at that point. You had mentioned game two, so I'm going to hop right into it. Game two, actually, you guys played a lot more aggressive after being shut out in game one, even getting to the point where Hasek threw his blocker at Peter Bondra after some accidental contact in the corner. How important was that to get under Hasek's skin?
Well, yeah, those are little things, you know. When it happened, you're like, oh, that's you feel that maybe you have an edge for some reason. Yeah, you know, after you say that, I do remember that something like that happened. Yeah. So anyway, we knew that we had to do special things to get under his skin and to beat this guy. And, you know, to have, it's not very often that, Peter Bondra would get players, you know, to get goalies pissed off by, you know, going to the crease and hitting him a little bit. I mean, you would probably get goalies pissed off by scoring a lot of goals on him.
You
see that and stuff, and you're like, okay, yeah, you get him rattled a little bit. It can hurt, you know.
Game three, the Capitals took over the series with a pair of goals from both Bondra and Richard Zednik, which Bondra actually told a fib to Zednik before the game, saying that the game was going to be televised live in Slovakia, which he didn't know if that was the case or not. How important was it to win games three and four on the road in Buffalo? And we'll get to game six in a moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, each game that you win is obviously important, but you know, when you get big games like that on the road, I mean, it's almost like getting a steal in a way. You know, experts will say, hey, you're not supposed to go on the visitor's ice and win many playoff games, you know, and so we ended up doing it. But it's, you know, Buffalo was obviously for me personally a rink where I always enjoyed playing. Yeah, you know, great fans, great crowd. So, you know, when it's exciting to play, you know, if you're at home or if you're on the road, you know, it's like playing in Boston, you know. As a Bruins, obviously it was great to play there, but I also found out that as a visiting player, the rest of my career, Boston was a great place to play. Same as Montreal, you know, those places. So Buffalo was one of them.
Game six, overtime, the goal. How did it feel to score that goal, and what was that celebration like, both on and off the ice and in the locker, or both on the ice and in the locker room?
Well, we knew that it was obviously going to be a hard game to win, and it was. You know, we were just fighting every single shift. It was a hot spring. It was very, very humid. The ice was not very good. The memories that I have from that game is not really what happened during, you know, the entire games during the, you know, I'm sure that if I'd sit down and watch the entire games, you know, things would come back to mind. But I never did, you know, although I saw obviously the overtime goals a few times since then. But what I do remember is in the in our locker room, you know, before we went back on the ice and ended up, you know, winning the overtime there and clinching the series. Our coach, you know, Wilson said something referring to, you know, to the Apollo, you know, getting on the moon, you know, for the first time. And, you know, I don't remember exactly how his speech went.
I actually have it somewhere.
You do? Well, that's good. Because, you know, that it was kind of cool. It was kind of neat. You know, you get a coach who comes before a big period where you just about to step on the ice, and he's not talking about hockey. You know, he's talking about something in life that is gonna hopefully for him stimulate some of his players. And then, you know, I just took it, and I thought, hey, it's cool. Yeah, you know, I mean, we're gonna go, and we're gonna be the first Capitals teams who are gonna make it to, you know, to the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, for him referring as Apollo getting to the moon for the first time. And then on the way out, you know, I just walked by him, and it just came like this, you know, without, I said, hey, I'm going to be Neil Armstrong. and I don't remember if I laughed or if whatever, but I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to be Neil Armstrong. And just went on the ice, and man, you know, this happened, you know, it's so, yeah. So anyway, that's, it was kind of neat, you know, it's like, I never thought that I would say something like this. I said it, and it in a way put me on the spot. Not that I was adding pressure, but I just, hey, in a way, like, I was just saying, hey, I'm going to try to be Neil Armstrong. I'm going to try to be the guy who's going to, you know, score the goal and you know, the goal that's gonna allow our team to be there. And it turned out that way. So it's what actually makes that story funny. So
I want to move away from the questions for a moment so I can bring this up. Full credit to Rachel Alexander, who was covering the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. This is the actual thing I want to read. Head coach Ron Wilson compared the win to the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And this is the quote that you said, and I want to bring this correlation to it, because Wilson mentioned Apollo 11. You have an aeronautical engineering degree. And your exact quote was, I guess everyone wants to be a hero in a game like this. I looked at them just before we went into overtime and told assistant coach Tim Army, he was looking at Neil Armstrong, it's good to put a little pressure on yourself and try to do it. This is the goal that brings you into the finals. It is the biggest deal. And that is your exact quote from the Washington Post after you had won the game.
Okay, that's cool. So again, it's so so long ago, you know, but yeah, so it's... Yeah, I remember I was, you know, if I remember right, I was just about to walk out of the locker room to the tunnel, and that's when this whole thing happened. And, yeah, so it was, it's funny. It's just funny.
I always found it fascinating about the correlation. Wilson brings up Apollo 11 and the degree that you have. It made it a little bit more funnier for me when I saw that. Last question about Buffalo, then we'll move to the Stanley Cup final. What was it like celebrating with the fans at Piney Orchard Ice Rink after coming home from Buffalo?
Yeah, well, that's obviously great memories that I have from that. I remember, like, you know, we used to obviously fly in and out of Baltimore. And then on our bus, you know, like, we had, you know, cars, like, and it was late, you know, and then, you know, as you get closer and closer to the practice facility at Piney Orchard, more and more people, and then yeah, you know, it was it was really something. It was fun. It was you know, you feel very happy as a player when you see that you bring this kind of joy to fans, and you know, you feel appreciated, but what you really feel is that you know, you bring a level of joy to supporters and fans who have been behind the teams for so long, you know. So it's pretty special.
So going into game one of the Stanley Cup final against Detroit, the Capitals were major underdogs. And I say major because at least with Buffalo, you had some people picking you guys to win. Detroit, mm-hmm. Nobody was picking you guys to win. What was the atmosphere like in the locker room before playing in the first ever Stanley Cup final game in franchise history? And then how huge was it to see Richard Zednik score the first Stanley Cup final goal in franchise history as well?
Well, you know, each of those are it's very special, since you know you get there for the first time as a player, for me anyway. We get
to Detroit. Obviously, we had a few days off. I remember Ron Wilson giving us a few days off before getting back on the ice to practice and before getting to Detroit. You know, by the time you get that far in the playoffs, obviously you do have, you know, different injuries and a lot of fatigue accumulated. So those days off, in a way, are good. But in a way, they're not. And I felt that, you know, I guess I wish that we could have got faster on the ice against Detroit after the big hype that we lived, you know, beating Buffalo. And it was not the case. But at the same time, you know, we did go to Detroit believing that, you know, we had the team capable of beating them. And honestly, the first two games that we played there, those games could, and I you know, I guess you could also say should have gone our way. There's one game, I mean, we had it, you know, it's especially if, you know, not to blame him. I mean, it can happen to anybody, but, you know, when S.A.T. Kanen had the open net and missed it, I mean, that was the game, you know. And but the other game also, you know, I felt that we, you know, we could have it, you know. I don't recall exactly how it went, score for score, and, you know, who had the lead and the advantages, but I knew that we played well enough to beat Detroit on their ice. But then it didn't happen. We came back from there down, you know, 0-2. And what I remember from that point on was a big letdown. You know, when we got on the ice for game three, and, you know, we saw that many people had sold their tickets to Detroit fans. You know, as a player, obviously, it's not a fun thing to see and to feel, and we all felt it. Although, you know, I mean, we're still there and we're competing, you know, trying to get back into the series, but you don't feel that you have the same, you know, the same support. Yeah, for sure.
I want to go back to game two, then we'll hop into game three and game four in a moment. Obviously, you mentioned Tikkanen. In game two, the Capitals, you did have your first lead in the series with a two-goal lead in the third period. Tikkanen missed a wide-open net. Like you said, it can happen to anybody. As a result, the momentum shifted in the Red Wings' favor and came back to win 5-4 in overtime. Before I ask this question, I should note games 1, 2, and 3 were all decided by one goal. They're all one-goal games. So that's how close they were. How much did it hurt to see Tiikkanen miss the empty net and then lose in overtime? And then we'll talk about game 3 and game 4 in a moment.
Yeah. I remember on the bench, you know, I was on the bench when you missed a goal. And I remember, you know, all the players, like, almost like getting up like it was a goal and ready to cheer. And then he missed. And then it was like, ooh. And it's almost like this, this kind of stuff comes back to bite you because it gives the other team a chance to stay alive. And with the quality of players that they had in their lineup, this is the, the saying of, you have your foot on the snake's head. I mean, that's exactly it. You just lift your foot and that's it. And you just end up getting bitten. And that was a tough one to take. And and again, it's really not to put the blame on him. I mean, as a player, you obviously take it very hard, and as a teammate, you feel for him. He's obviously he was a player who who played, three great rounds, for us, doing an amazing job shutting down top guys on the other team. And then, this happens. Personally, I felt bad for him, and obviously felt bad that, we ended up giving them the chance to get back in the game and to beat us.
After losing game 3 in another close one-goal game, the Capitals were routed in game 4 by the Red Wings to sweep the series to win their second consecutive Stanley Cup. How much did it hurt losing that game, being swept, and then knowing that the season was officially over? And I want to add one extra piece. What was it like for you to see Dale Hunter finally get the opportunity to play in the Stanley Cup final, especially knowing how much you meant to the team?
Yeah. Well, to start with Huntsie, I don't know if somehow you can find that on video somewhere, but at the end of the overtime win against Buffalo, I was interviewed by Hockey Night in Canada by CBC, and the entire time that I was answering questions, I was obviously aware of my teammates, on the ice close to me, celebrating, and then there's one thing that I didn't want to miss was just to have Dale Hunter being presented the trophy, touch it or not. I mean, to me, it was not important. But when I believe if I'm right, when he was presented with the I guess it's the Connie Smythe Trophy. The Prince of Wales Trophy. I was still answering questions, and I stopped answering questions, saying that, in a way, I wanted to shut down the interview, putting the focus on Dale Hunter, and having the chance as a teammate to see him. So for me, it's. It was big to be on a team that would have him there and reaching the finals for the first time of his career after such a long and good career. And I said good career, I should say great career.
It was his 18th season when you guys made it to the cup final.
Because there's something you need to remember is, you know, for me, Dale Hunter was almost a, you know, I mean, Peter Stastny was my idol, but, you know, Dale Hunter was one of my favorite players for the Nordiques, who was my team when I was young at that age, you know? So I was a big, big fan of Dale Hunter, you know, early in his career playing alongside Michel Goulet. He was what Michael Pivanka was for Peter Bondra. You know, he was a tremendous playmaker, a great team guy. And so, you know, then I find myself, you know, playing in Washington with Hansi for all those years, and to be there at, you know, that season where he reached, you know, we reached the finals. So it was a good feeling. I was extremely, extremely happy for him.
What was it like to see the Red Wings bring out Vladimir Konstantinov onto the ice to have him be a part of their Stanley Cup celebration? And note, when the Wings won the Cup in 97 against Philadelphia, Konstantinov was part of that limo accident and has been pretty much in a wheelchair ever since. So what was that like to see them do that with Konstantinov?
It was not surprising. You know, we knew all along that he was obviously a big element of stimulation, if I can use that word, motivation, obviously. You know, they wanted to win for him, you know, and we all knew that. So to see them bringing him on the ice after they won, I mean, it was just a natural thing to do, and it was sharp, obviously. So, that game four, you know, we didn't play we were not the same team anymore, you know. Yeah, it was tough, you know, losing those three games, close games, and then you get to game four, and you know, the you look in the stands and it's red all over the place, and it's you know, we all felt like it's, in a way, it was over, you know, and it's it was not a fun game to play. It was you just hope to have a great start and to get on the roll and to build, you know, to build on something, and it never happened.
It should be noted that when the Red Wings were doing their celebration, Ron Wilson stayed on the bench to watch the Stanley Cup be awarded. And the quote that he said in the Washington Post was, "There's no point hiding in the back room and avoiding it. You want to see the Stanley Cup up close and dream that next year it's going to be our team that holds it over our heads." What are your thoughts on that comment from Wilson? Because he stayed on the bench to watch the Cup be awarded.
Well, again, you know, I mean, it's, you know, each person has the liberty to think and believe what they want, you know, and, you know, I can understand, you know, what he says and what he meant by that. You know, personally, I mean, I remember after losing at the Olympics, and, you know, being on the line there and waiting for the people to bring the silver medal to put around your neck when you battled, you just lost the gold medal. The silver doesn't feel good, you know. At one point, I mean, you know, the pride comes back and you realize that, hey, what you achieved was really amazing. But right there on the spot, I mean, it's not a good feeling to be there and to watch the celebration on the other side. And, you know, seriously, I mean, it's not something that I need to witness and see I don't need to be there and watch, you know, the celebration on the other side. I mean, it's you're hurt and you just want to go, and you know that they're celebrating and you don't need to watch it. So that's my point of view. To watch, you know, Detroit celebrate and to raise the cup, it won't bring a desire higher for me to win the next year. You know, that desire is there already. I mean, it's so anyway, that's my thinking about that. And
I can agree with that. I play as well, and there was one point in a ball hockey league I actually played in 3 straight championship games and lost all 3 of them, and I don't think I ever stayed for any of the celebrations for those losses. So I understand that point of view as a competitor as well. Got 2 more questions. Second to last, Steve Yzerman of the Red Wings was named the winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy as the MVP of the playoffs. How strongly did you guys feel that it could have been Kolzig? And it should be noted that up to that point, there were about 5 other players on the losing team who had won the Conn Smythe.
I know that it can happen, and it did happen, that a player on the losing team, especially a goalie, you know, could win the Conn Smythe. To me, the Conn Smythe, I guess when I was young, it was kind of a cool thing, you know, and to be named the MVP, and but you see the players lately who win that Conn Smythe trophy. I mean, they just go there, they shake hands, and they barely touch the trophy. You know, it's really about the Stanley Cup, and I know for a fact that Steve Yzerman, by that time in his career, had learned that. You know, he had learned that. You know, he really became an amazing captain and team guy, and as far as, should Ole have won it more than him, hey, they're the team that won, it's not to take anything away from Ole. I mean, he played great, and other guys did. And, so again, for me, it's not that important. You know, I don't remember really who wins that trophy from year to year. You remember who wins the cup more than who wins the Conn Smythe. So
with that is the last question for you. From start to finish, what were some of your greatest memories from the 1997-98 season? When you look back, like we just had a conversation about the season as a whole, what are some of those favorite moments or memories that you have?
I guess my answer would be the entire spring. And when I say that, I'm not talking about just the games. You know, the games were a part of it, but you enter the playoffs and you have this long run who ended up not being the end that you wished that could be, but the entire stretch is just an amazing time. The times between games, and playoff hockey is on a total different level. I mean, it has nothing to do with the rest of the season. It's for me, I was always really, really hyped and excited for playoff hockey. When I missed it a couple years, it's a big letdown. This is what I played for each season, and then once you're in, you just want to play and contribute as a player to give your your team a chance to get as far as possible and to win at the end. And that, you know, that spring, that's what it was, you know. So it's it was the those nights after games where you just go out to eat, you have friends in town, you go with teammates. You know, I was hanging out with Chris a lot, and we just had a great spring. Remember, we had our Harley Davidson, so on days off, you know, we'd go on rides and then try to get our minds away from the game, as it was very important. When you had the possibility to relax and get your mind to think about, you know, to relax and think about something else. So riding up and down the George Washington Parkway, and then go towards, I remember one time, you know, we went pretty far down and got to the to Ocean City and then came back the next day. And the entire time that you do those things or you're at a restaurant and you do constantly have that feeling that you're just in a great playoffs, having the time of your life, you know. And that's what it was. So for me, I cannot pinpoint like a special day or a special thing. It was really like the build up of the, you know, all those, you know, those 3 months, those weeks, you know, that you go to battle and you put in everything you have to win this thing. So that's what it was, really.
So I will say this: you played 21 playoff games. You were tied for first on the team with 7 goals. You had 10 assists for 17 points, which I also believe was tied for first on the team. You had a league-leading 4 game-winning goals, with your last one seeing you jump into the arms of Chris Simon, and something that I'll always remember because I was 11 years old when it happened. Joey, thank you so much for doing this, and I am very grateful for you and your time.
Okay, it was fun. I appreciate helping you on that, and I admire the research and the work that you did. I mean, it's really cool, really, really cool.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, this is Joey Juneau, and thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for reading.